The great scene from the book 30 Hours with a Corpse and Other Tales of the Grand Guignol. Maurice Lavelle, introduced and edited by S.T. Yoshi. The great scene. A voice mounted from the depths of the obscurity in which the main floor of the theater was left despite the glare of the 6 dusty stage lamps. "That's not the way, Mr. F. What, you do it over again?" F., who had been perched on a chair which represented the staircase of a chateau, jumped down and made his way to the front of the stage. Respectfully, yet not without a certain hauteur, his foot on the prompter's cubbyhole, his elbow on his knee, and his hand held to his ear like an ear trumpet, he asked, "What is that, mister?" The author called back at the top of his voice as if making head against a tumult. "I should like to have in that passage more ardor, more passion, more grief. Do you understand?"
"I understand," answered F. with a bow.
The author would have been glad to elaborate his meaning, but F., having already returned to his chair staircase and said to his comrades, "Let us do it over, my friends," played the climax of the scene again, just as he had played it before.
"That's not right yet! It's not right yet!"
cried the author. "You're on the first step, Mille. Ravignon lifts her arms toward you. You stop her with a gesture."
"What is it?"
"A silence. You understand, miss? A silence. A simple silence. And you, Mr. F., you ask her, almost in a whisper, 'Your brother, my son,' and you bow your head, miss. That is enough. He has understood you from that gesture, and then you, Mr. F., you utter a cry. A harrowing cry, and all the rest of the scene is only a sob. You see what I want, right? Let's try it again!" With a glacial patience, F. played the scene over, but this time his articulation was hardly any more impassioned, and his gestures, barely sketched out, seemed to die away, as if succumbing to some invisible obstacle. 5 o'clock sounded, and the players left the stage. The author rejoined F. in the wings. After having gesticulated, shouted, and fumed for 3 hours, he had a moist skin, a dry tongue, and a hoarse voice. F., as he made his way to his dressing room, listened to the other composedly. He was an old actor, reckoned as one of the glories of the stage, and all his noblest traditions survived in him. The author had thrown an arm across his shoulders and talked to him as they walked along.
"Is the capital scene, my dear sir. If it doesn't go, the whole piece will fail. What it needs is emotion, grandeur, and despair. Don't hesitate to let yourself go. You can make, and you ought to make, something sensational out of it. This is just the scene for you."
I see very well what you wish, but at rehearsal I can't let myself go. I need costume, light, atmosphere, but don't worry." Still, the author insisted, timid and firm at the same time.
"Certainly, I won't worry. Certainly, but I should like to have you once before the first night. Only once. Show me real quality. Only once. Just once. Eh? Think about it. We're only 3 days from the premiere."
"Don't worry," repeated F. Then he went away. At this moment, the director passed by, and he asked with a pleasant smile, "Well, how does it go? Are you satisfied?"
"Satisfied? My dear man, my piece is ruined. You understand? Ruined. Ravignon is passable. The light effects are fizzle, and F is bad. Bad. Bad."
The director tried to calm him. He had heard many others talk this way, and he knew that in the theater, better than anywhere else, everything somehow works out. F was an artist, sure, conscientious, incapable of slighting his roles. Let him play them 200 times. Obstinate? Yes. Unequal at rehearsals? Possibly, but exceeding all expectations when the curtain went up. The author, still skeptical, shook his head. "Let's wait and see, my dear master," the director protested. And when a director thus addresses an author who has only a vague claim to such a title, he's using his ultimate argument. "Let's wait and see. Have more confidence.
I'm as much interested in the success of your piece as you are. Don't get worried yourself, and don't worry him. He's so-so now, perhaps. Only so-so, but he will be superb. That I guarantee you. The first night arrived. In the back of a box alongside the director, the author listened to his play. The first part of it was a torture. With each spectator who entered late, with each seat slammed down, he had the feeling that humanity in general was in a conspiracy to ruin him. Yet, the director kept whispering to him, "It's a go. It's a go. It's a go." At the first curtain, he wanted to go up to the dressing rooms and give some last suggestions to the actors, but the director dissuaded him. "Let them alone. Don't bother them. Believe me, it will be a success." The second act had a success destiny, and the curtain rose for the third act. F finally appeared, descending the staircase with an air of nobility. Neil Ravignan stretched out her arms toward him. He stopped her with a gesture and said, "What is it?" And then, in a low tone, "Your brother, my son." She bowed her head, and he, just as at the rehearsals, without a cry, without a sob, began his set speech. Clinging to the arms of his velvet-covered seat, arching his shoulders, the author growled out as if he could communicate his own fire to the actor. "Let go! Let go! Let go!" But F continued to the end in a colorless voice. While the curtain descended amid merely courteous applause, the author ran to the wings. The fury which he had held back for 8 days nearly strangled him. F was returning to his dressing room. "Well, are you satisfied?" the author shouted at him. "You have wrecked my play. You are going to reserve yourself for the first performance. You should have talent, my dear sir, before you have genius. Effects are not improvised. They are produced by hard work. And besides, what a role you had. What a scene. A scene to raise the house. A father who has only one love. Only one joy in the world, his son. They tell him of his son's death, and you stand there, tranquil, half stupefied. You couldn't give a fuck. I disclaimed the scene. Even in writing it, I shouted it." Then the old actor answered softly, without anger, without indignation, without any show of wounded pride. "You're wrong, sir. And that's because, fortunately for you, you don't know. I learned only 4 hours ago of the death of my son killed at Crenoan. And I did not cry aloud then any more than I do now."